Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Welcome to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am super excited to have today's guest here with me. I don't even know if I want to introduce her first or just talk about all the good news that's coming from this podcast. I think I'll just introduce her. So today I have with me Pat Bennett, the founder and president. Did I say that right? President of Pat's Granola, local food company here in Cleveland. Say hello, Pat.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Shayna, for inviting me to be a guest on the show.
Of course. So let's just do some backstory before we get to like where we're headed for this.
Sure.
We met at one of our pop-up shops.
We certainly did. The CLE Urban Winery.
Yes. And you were just so gracious to be there. Like I have never seen, it warmed my heart because I just kept sitting there. I was in a bad space. Like, oh my God, this thing is not right. People are just probably like, we never want to come do, like I was all in my head. And you were just like, I want to thank you for having me.
We loved being there. It was a wonderful space. You were very gracious and kind to us. And I remember you saying to me, I just love your tablescape, because I had the table covered with a quilt. And we had our granola there, and we had people drinking wine, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. It felt like you set that up just for us.
But you walked away with, like, good conversation. So I remember
great conversation
in that event. You know, at one point I'm like, is she even selling anything or is she just like having wine and talking to destiny?
We did a lot of that, but we also made some wonderful contacts. And people who visited the winery came from out of the neighborhood. And we are people, they follow us now and they become fans of Pat's Granola. So the exposure was great. The vibe for the event was great. And even the venue really just set us up so beautifully.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you came. I'm glad I met you that day.
Same.
So tell me how Pat's Granola got started.
Sure.
How long you been in business? Speak up a little bit, but yeah, tell me how you got started.
Yeah, so I began making granola about 25 years ago in a response to the mom's big question of what are we going to eat for our family? My young son at the time was playing sports, and he was always hungry. He was hungry before the game, he was hungry during the game, he was hungry after the game, and many of the places that we went really had bad food or there was no food whatsoever. So I was always doing takeout or packing food for him, which he didn't like. He wanted junk food. And it took me a year to develop food that he would eat. And granola was something that we both liked, although I didn't call it that at the time.
What did you call it?
Called it trail mix.
Okay.
Or the stuff.
The stuff.
The stuff.
Okay.
Because it had lots of ingredients in it. And he actually didn't really even like it. He ate it because that was all I brought for us to eat. But his friends and all his friends loved it. And everywhere we went, did your mom bring the stuff? And so I just continued to make it, really just for family and friends. Holiday gifts. I took it to work. And all these sporting events. It traveled everywhere, including to the New York Marathon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it went to the Super Bowl one year. People took it for snacks. 2 years ago, I started the company as a formal basis. And Cleveland has been a great city to start a food business. And it's been very supportive. You've been terrific because
you
supported the business. And when we started talking about food, that's something that resonated with me, as well as the city of Cleveland and what that food experience looks like in the city of Cleveland.
So you just gave me a great segue to kind of why you're here, but not why you're here. I like having you around my office anyway, but where we're headed. So you mentioned that Cleveland's a good food city.
Yes.
And just what's your experience or why do you say we hear it? And as a Clevelander, like, yes, Cleveland's a food city. What does that mean?
It means that you can get good food, relatively inexpensive, and the farm to table is something that really fascinated me. When I first moved here about 8 years ago, I was able to actually go to a farm and pick food, which is something I wasn't able to do when I lived in New York. I lived in New York City, and then I lived in upstate New York, which was semi-rural, but the farms had really moved away. So for me to move here and to be able to pick an apple, I ran into a cornfield when I first moved here. I was just discovering hand-painted signs on the side of the road, fresh eggs, fresh beef, pick your own. That made my heart sing. And every weekend, I would just go out into the countryside. I would uncover farmers markets. And I thought, these people are really doing good stuff. They are growing my food. And they're proud. And they have a story. And they're really working incredibly hard to do that, to bring that to me and to other people like it.
I think for me, like, I see the same signs on the road, but it just doesn't click like, yes, fresh apples. And you just keep driving to where you're headed, you know.
Oh, you're missing something.
I know. And we've done apple picking.
Yes.
It's one of the things that I think as Clevelanders, we go pick apples at Halloween time. But it's only once a year, you know. But as you're saying that, I'm thinking about how, you know, one of the things I like about the city is that we're always so close to any experience you want to have. So if you want to have, you know, we're an urban city. But if you want to have a farm, like, you don't have to go too far.
No, there are urban farms. There are people who have beautiful gardens in their backyards in the city of Cleveland, which are stunning to me. That literally you can go out and cut collard greens. You can pick pole beans. You can have squash. You can have cucumber, tomatoes. Tomato farming here is a big deal. Every family loves having fresh tomatoes. You can do that here.
Yeah. We have in my family, we would do, every year we would plant beans.
Same.
And even if we didn't, we just planted food. Like, even if we didn't grow it to eat it, like, we got squash if you want it. Like,
the whole growing experience here is really important. It explains so much about the fabric and culture of families and how people come together. And teaching children about how their food grows is really very, very important. Me as a mother, that is something I want to know where my food is coming from. And hence, starting making food, making real food, was very important to me, not only just for my family, but in making it that other people can eat it and enjoy it, and it was good for them.
So as we talk about food, we're going to talk about where we're headed. So you're taking on a new project.
So excited.
And it's part of, it's a new podcast, right?
Yes.
And the project is about food.
Correct.
And we are talking about and the beauty of the project is you're teaming up with Edible Cleveland. So as you talk about farm to table, that's what Edible Cleveland does.
That's right.
So Edible Cleveland, WOVU, and us here over at Black Girl Media have gotten together to talk about the food stories of Cleveland, but more importantly, our food stories, because our food stories aren't necessarily on East 4th Street.
That's right.
Our barbecue experience may not be Michael Simon, who I love, Michael Simon.
Yes.
But that's not my thought of authentic Cleveland barbecue.
Correct.
When I think of, you know, the Hot Sauce Williams or Whitmore's and all those things that we talk about, you
that's
know,
right.
Even a B&M these days. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to that. But what do you think, you know, what do you think about the Cleveland foodscape as it pertains to all of us? So the farm to table, like, honestly, that's never been a big thing for me. I'm probably taking it for granted because there are farmers markets and, oh, wow, that's fresh from the farm. Nice. I'll buy some. But it's never been like a need because it's always there for me.
Okay. I guess being an outsider from Cleveland is a very different experience for me because I'm looking at it as a newcomer. And so I don't have a lot of the past experience of what Clevelanders, and we've talked about this a lot, what is it that I bring, which is fresh eyes. I'm genuinely interested in people's food experience and generally interested in everyone has to eat, but what is it that they're choosing to eat? How are they choosing to buy it? Where are they choosing to go to get it? How far are they willing to travel to get it? And what is it that they're willing to do to prepare it? And as a working mother, that is something that was very, very important to me. If you're working long hours, you want something delicious to eat. You can't afford to eat out, but you want the ability to have good, fresh food that you can get on the table in under 30 minutes, in my case. Mm-hmm. And so I found I can do that here because I can get to fresh food. But that is almost a luxury for a lot of people, And that's the other side of the story.
Right. Here. And even like in the city here. So that's right. We think about food insecurity, as it's called, or food deserts.
That's right.
And I think so often we drive through those spaces but don't think about it.
I think about it a lot. I think about what happens when I see school children on the way to school stopping at the local convenience store.
Right. And I started teaching in the Glenville community. I started my teaching career in Glenville, went a bunch of places, came back and finished at Glenville High School. So that's why Glenville is a great place in my heart.
Right.
Because so many years were in Glenville. But seeing kids come in the morning, even some of the suburbs, and they're eating, you know, the Flaming Hot Cheetos at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like,
yes.
I couldn't even fathom that.
Correct.
Like, I get you want to eat snacks, and you might not, you're a teenager, you're not eating healthy, but, like, because they stop, like you said, at a convenience store. It never occurred to me. You know, I always just took it as that was a choice, and I think sometimes when we're removed from the situation, we think people are making those just poor choices when they made the best of their options.
I think that that's true. You and I were fortunate in that we had choices as to, I was always given food, and I wasn't given a choice about what to eat. The thought of my stopping at a store on the way to school.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
When I was bused, so that wasn't even an option. And two, I didn't have money as a kid to buy anything. I brought my lunch. My lunch was packed every day.
Right.
But my mother also had a huge garden, and that's where the food came from.
Okay.
And so that was important. Here, I can drive through neighborhood after neighborhood and never see a grocery store.
Right.
And that is something that is alarming to me. And it's something that concerns me, not just from the family perspective, but older people, people on a fixed income, people who don't have transportation, have disabilities, don't have the ability to get out of their neighborhood, or are dependent on other people to provide food to them.
And I think that's where I didn't see it. And so as we're going along with the project, or I remember I was sitting in probably the most affluent place to realize that I've been driving through a food desert all the time. So I was at a speech that Chef Eric Wells did.
Yes.
He did it at university school for the boys there. Yes. And so, you know, you think about your affluence of that private school. And he said, you know, within 2 miles, if you go down Kinsman, you're in a food desert. And I'm like, no, you know, you drive through Shaker, from Shaker down Chagrin, you're downtown. You know, you don't think about what's off of that main road. Oh, I didn't. And so to think that, no, like, you just go get groceries, you know, because for me, the grocery store is not this close. I just have to get in the car and go someplace. But it wasn't until, like, I was without transportation
that you realized
that. I realized. And even where I live, like, we have a grocery store. But when I was without transportation, how do I do this?
Exactly. The logistics of not only getting there, but having to bring your groceries back.
Right. Did I need one of those little rolly carts that I did not want to do? You know, I did not want to take a rolly cart to get groceries, like the family groceries. That's one thing here or there.
That's right.
And take it on the bus or the rapid.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
You know, and so, like, I would find myself doing small grocery runs. Like, can I fit it in my backpack? That's why I always have a backpack. Like, okay, I got a little room in my backpack. I can get eggs today and maybe some lunch meat. And then I would have to wait for a family member to take me to do grocery shopping.
A big grocery shop, sure.
And even for me, because I live by, like, a Whole Foods or a Heinen, so I can walk there, but that's just not even affordable at the time.
Different issue entirely.
So to get to a Walmart or a Dave's or a Giant Eagle or any of those places that were more affordable, the bus that went out from where I lived, it ran once an hour, right? So all those things started coming to me, and that's me with options. So, again, I'm near a Heinen's. I'm near a Whole Foods. I'm near a Walmart. I'm near a Giant Eagle, you know, Walgreens that has some fresh fruit. But the idea of the how do I manage this and myself with kids, you know, like that never occurred to me. So imagine you don't even have the option. I couldn't until recently. And then that, I started seeing it.
That explains why the health of the city and the health of our residents is so critically important, why the mortality rates are higher in cities that don't have access to food, the whole notion that we can't feed ourselves is something that resonates with me, or we're subjected to what you just described as, I have to eat what's available and that is sold and that I can afford.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, because maybe someone can't go to Heinen's. They can't go to Whole Foods, which, you know, is lovingly called Whole Paycheck.
Right.
I'm really not a Whole Food shopper for many different reasons. Not that it's bad or that it's good. I just choose not necessarily to go there. I shop there occasionally.
Right.
I'd rather go to the farmer's market.
Right.
If I have the ability to do that.
Right.
Not everybody can.
Right.
Not everybody can.
And so, you know, going to think about that and thinking about where we're headed on the podcast, did you say the podcast name?
I didn't, but the podcast name is Welcome to CLE Food Stories.
Right.
And it's a project from Real Cleveland Food Experience Project.
Right. So that project, I'm super excited about. WOVU, like I said, is teaming up with us in Edible Cleveland to talk about food and just the idea of how do we get food, period. So, you know, I tell the story, and I tell it now because I'm comfortable in telling it that people don't know. Like, I've stood in a Heinen's counting change on can we afford food. And so I told someone that story. They're like, girl, that was your problem. You was at a Heinen's. And I said, but I got off the rapid, and I was walking home, and that was on the way. Like, there was no other choice but a two-hour ride a little further.
Correct.
And I was tired, you know. So the idea of how do we get food, where is food, and let's talk about, like, even the farmer's markets, because it's cold most of the time.
It's cold.
Here in Cleveland.
And people would consider it to be pricey, mm-hmm. you know, because food that's grown, maybe it's organic, mm-hmm. tends to be more expensive. So for people on a fixed income, people who are living paycheck to paycheck,
right.
or as I like to say, there's more month than money.
Absolutely.
The farmer's market may not necessarily be an option.
Right, right. And again, I'm on a rapid line, so I go through the one at Shaker Square.
Correct.
Enjoy going there, but I know that I have, and especially in years past, because now they're taking SNAP benefits.
Yes, they are. I've seen that.
And so that's a good thing for people. But still, if it's transportation, it's all related.
You can't get there. You can't get there.
Or carry the stuff. You know, everybody's carrying
yes.
bags and bags. Yes. You need your family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to transition that to the conversation we were having before about food waste. Mm. Because one of the things that I want to do with the project is to talk about where these pop-up farmers markets are. Like, we know that there's one in Shaker Square. We know that the Cleveland Clinic has one on campus.
That's right.
But I also know across the street, right out this window behind me, there's one that shows up in the summers. But I could never figure out when it shows up. Like, it's a certain Wednesday a month, and it's only during the summer. And so I watch them at the end of the day pack up a lot of food that's still sitting there.
And you wondered, where's the food going?
Where is it going, but how come no one's here for it? Like, you know, even where we sit right now, there's not a grocery store around here.
No, there's not.
So we're at 30th. We could go all the way up to Dave's, which I love that Dave's, by the way. I've broken the habit of going there every day. I used to go there every morning on my
yes,
way down.
Yes, you told me.
But I've broken that habit. So even around here, if I want to run out for a snack.
You're really limited. I don't know.
I have to go to Dave's.
You have to go to Dave's.
Or I have to go down to 9th Street to mm-hmm. Heinen's. Mm-hmm. And so as someone said, you know, even one of our white colleagues was like, and that's just not an option for people that live over here.
It's not.
Let's just run the Heinen's on 9th Street.
No.
No.
No, no, no. The transportation issue is huge in terms of access. Mm-hmm. You and I have access to transportation, as you said, but it became very real to you when you didn't have a car.
Correct.
You know, being from New York City, people don't have cars in the city, per se, so they do travel on buses and subways, mm-hmm. and they walk. Mm-hmm. Something I don't see people doing here as much, because the population is not set up the same way. You're in high rises, you're in projects, you're in tenements. People are in close quarters, so there are businesses and services to support
Absolutely.
That. This city isn't laid out that way, and I took that for granted until I went through block after block and not seen any food whatsoever mm-hmm. of any type.
And it's unique that, especially when we talk about, I think, the inner city, it's not, because your suburbs are.
Yes, they are.
If you're living in maybe a Lakewood,
yes.
there's a grocery store in Lakewood,
That's
there's probably
right.
a Target Walmart in Lakewood.
That's
like,
right. That's
you don't
right.
have to go far. But even with the walking, we just don't walk.
No.
And we don't take transit.
No, no. And that, I think, contributes to the health and the morbidity of this city, which is very sad that it's a multi-level and complex issue. And I know that Metro Health is looking at it, Cleveland Clinic certainly, some of the other major health providers in the city. But again, you have to get there.
Right.
You have to be able to get there, because I know at Metro Health, they give out free food too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. And I see in neighborhoods where, I guess it's the Greater Cleveland Food Bank,
yep,
that has distribution centers. Mm-hmm. I see people lined up, mm-hmm, whatever that schedule is,
yep,
every single month.
Yep. So. And we're going to work with them to put the schedule on the website.
Oh, that's perfect.
For the food experience, because people need to know where their food is.
They do.
And they do. And even, like I know across the street, you don't have to necessarily be needy, but it's fresh food.
It is.
So for me, if I want to get potatoes or celery and it's free across the street, just imagine how that saves my food budget.
Huge. Huge. You're a working mom. Mm-hmm. You have two very hungry teenagers. I remember what that was like, because I had three, and they ate us out of house and home. And so, and I was shopping very regularly because I had to. One, I didn't have the capacity to store all the food,
right,
that they ate. But if you're living in an apartment, maybe you don't even have a full-size refrigerator. That's the other thing. You don't even have storage space. Or you have issues around electricity, mm-hmm, or you have issues around heating, or you have issues around your stove doesn't work. So that's the other thing. You have the food that you're bringing in. You don't have the full ability to prepare it, or you may not know what to do with fresh carrots or zucchini or fruits and vegetables that you're not familiar with other than an apple or an orange. What else can you do with it?
So one of the ideas, what you just said, took me back to one of our conversations about where you want to go with the podcast and,
yes,
what you want to do is also make the meals.
Make the meals.
So I know, like, in our family, at one point, you know, you go through the struggle, but you don't feel like you're in the struggle. Like, we just don't have apples today. You know, like, and then all of a sudden, you don't have apples for a month. And so we had a discussion in my house, and my daughter said something about celery. Like, my son was like, hey, I heard celery is zero calorie. Like, you burn calories eating the celery, you know. That, and she's like, we don't ever have celery. And it just was kind of like, oh.
Is that true?
We didn't buy it, but they weren't eating it.
So you didn't buy it.
Right.
It was wasteful.
And eventually we stopped buying a lot of fruits and veggies because you're not eating it. But what I didn't realize was my shopping habits were bad, that I was buying the processed food that they ate. Like, if you eat Pop-Tarts, I'll buy Pop-Tarts. Why have these apples sitting here?
Yeah.
Quit buying the Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's a mom.
But, yeah. Issue. And so, but that whole issue of when I started putting food back, my kids would start asking, like, can we eat those grapes?
Yes.
Like, is this something,
yes,
for you only, Mom?
Oh,
you
my know? Gosh. Oh, my
and
gosh.
I'm like,
yeah.
So I've made it a point now to make sure that we have, like, the carrots, even if it's just for snacks. Here's, grab a snack bag of carrots. Grab a smack of this. You know, celery. My daughter, I'm going to eat celery every day. Eat celery every day. Go do that thing.
I grew up in a home where my mother put the food down. We weren't given a choice. You ate what was there. I didn't go grocery shopping to pick, oh, I want this, I want, mm-hmm, I went with her only to help her.
Absolutely.
It wasn't like, Pat, what would you like for your breakfast? It was.
Here's breakfast.
This is what was served. This is what you ate. Or you went hungry.
Right.
We didn't have the ability to have snacks in the house. We didn't keep chips. Didn't keep things that, you know, my kids really liked. And I didn't realize that until I thought, wow, look at this stuff that we now can get. Mm-hmm. But I had to consciously think, well, wait a minute, there are three growing boys, two adults, and a very hungry big dog, and how to make that all work, because I really was very focused on good food, home-cooked food. I cooked food every single day, and even with a very long commute.
Nice.
So it took a lot of planning, but they're now in their 30s, and they're really grateful for having had that experience, and their food habits are good. Not everyone has the luxury,
right,
of being able to do it, but I'm consciously aware of now living in a city that everyone doesn't have that same option.
Okay.
And so back to the podcast, some of what you and I were talking about are that whole food waste issue. You know, what do people do with leftovers? Where are they choosing to get their food that they can get to? What can they afford to eat or afford to not eat?
Mm-hmm.
And what are they choosing to do? And even the whole working family, working mom, everyone's busy, super busy. One job, two jobs, sometimes three jobs is
and
enough.
Sports now. Is after-school activities
sports,
filter in?
Sports. Church activities is big,
yep,
for a lot of people. Civic activities, volunteering for a lot of adults, mm-hmm, and children,
mm-hmm,
what that experience looks like. and people just being stretched to the limit, but they're still hungry.
I think what I'm taking away from this one, and we're going to go to a break in a second, but I think what I'm taking away just from our conversation is how all the woes that we kind of deal with as a city are all interconnected.
They are.
So
they are.
I was at Cleveland Rising, the big summit they had, and they broke into, I think, like 30 subgroups. Someone wants to deal with transportation. Someone wants to deal with entrepreneurship. Someone wants to deal with whatever. But if you think about it, just based on, as you were saying it, you know, the transportation piece impacts the food piece, impacts to this piece, impacts to that piece. The poverty and not, you know, you might be working poor, so you have, you can buy the groceries, but your stove is broken. You can't, you have to wait for the paycheck. So that impacts how you eat, you know, and so those kind of choices, what I'm, you know, not that I didn't realize it, but I didn't see the impact of how, you know, the RTA bus lines, if that bus runs once an hour and you miss it getting your groceries, you're standing outside, and it could be, you know, because it's cold here, especially being in wintertime, you could be standing in a snowstorm waiting for a bus to get your food home.
Right.
And to me, that's just like, no way. Like, that's ridiculous.
That's the reality.
It is a reality. And, you know, I know a lot of people that are so removed from that reality that they don't, that's their fault.
Yes.
Like, they blame the victim. You know, no. That's why they need a car. I could never, you know, they, you know, like I said, I was driving through just because I didn't see a grocery store on Kinsman, to me, didn't mean there wasn't one on an off street. Like, it's just, I'm driving the wrong route to see it. And it never occurred to me that, no, if you turn and keep driving around here, there's still not a grocery store.
Well, that's part of what we talked about unpacking.
Right.
I think that was the conversation that you and I had several weeks ago when we were incubating how to do this podcast, the unpacking of all the issues around Cleveland being a food city, but what does that look like for people of color? What does that look like for people who don't have transportation that live in the city, who choose to live in the city, because that's what their experience is like. But food is near and dear to most people. They have good food memories. Many of them grew up around tables that were bountiful and plentiful because they had gardens. People moved from down south here. They brought those same food, beautiful memories with them. And I have them too. As you shared with me, you have them also. And some of the things around that, we want to preserve that. We want to tell those stories. So that's what this podcast is going to unpack in the city. And I'm excited for us to do this.
Very cool. So we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to transition to talk about some of the more fun food experiences that we've talked about before, but also an event that we both just attended. So stick around and we'll be right back.
This is Pat Bennett, and welcome to CLE Food Stories, a project of the Real Cleveland Food Experience. On our show, we'll be talking about the untold food stories and food topics in the city of Cleveland. We'll also be highlighting the people who are contributing in this food space, including urban chefs and concerned citizens. Tune in every other week on Apple, Google, Spotify, Anchor, and other channels.
All right, we're back with Pat Bennett from Pat's Granola and the CLE Food Stories podcast.
Perfect.
Hey. I'm so excited.
So am
it's
I.
Real now.
It is.
So we just came back. Let's talk about some good food stuff.
Good.
We just had the experience to go to the Taste of Black Cleveland, which is one of my favorite events every year.
It was wonderful.
And I always call it a give because I don't ask anything for them, you know, like, how can I support? I even reached out and said, hey, how can Black girls support your marketing? Like, everybody needs to know that this event, I bought tickets that I didn't even use. Like, I just wanted to make sure that money was poured into this event.
Yeah.
So you said it was wonderful. What was your first take?
I didn't have any expectations because I didn't know what to expect. It was my first time when you asked me to go. And then you confirmed with me, you said, you're still going with me. And I said, of course I'm going with you. So when I met you at the venue, I hadn't been to the Rocket Mortgage after the renovation. I've only been to the cube once.
Right.
And so you were kind of explaining to me what happened there and the space. And, you know, when we walked in, I was really stunned. I was stunned at the number of people that came to the event, I was really overwhelmed by the food. The presentation, that where did all these people come from? And they poured their heart and soul into presenting the best of their best. I loved talking to them. I loved the smiles. I loved the pride that they showed. I loved watching people eating the food and taking seconds or sneaking seconds. It was a very good vibe overall. I had so much fun. And I was smiling. I was just smiling and thinking, this is a whole other side of Cleveland that I haven't really delved into because I work. I can't always get out to places, but I have a long list now of places and great foods I want to try. And so that was my impression of it.
I think the other cool thing for me was that the caterers, like I don't often use caterers.
Oh, huge amount of caterers.
But even from doing the summit, now I have a list of caterers to go to. And it was a very good introduction to people that we might not meet.
That's right.
So, you know, I sing the praises of Cleveland Mofongo because every year I look forward to them. And I would say, like, old Shana, we're not going to the West Side. We're not going to Lorraine. That's how, you know, as Clevelanders, we're not going over there. So look at the food I'm missing, though. Like, that's amazing.
Awesome food.
And so even the same thing with Capo. And, you know, Capo's a friend now, but I would have never probably, before this experience of just Black Girl and CLE, I wouldn't have driven out places to get the food I want. I would just would have said, oh, well, it's not around here. I guess I have to eat something else. Mm-hmm. But now to say, I think I'm going to drive to Glenville because I really want that cheesesteak today.
This food was delicious. That was probably one of the best cheesesteaks I've ever eaten. And I'm sorry I couldn't eat more, but you and I were technically working, trying to cover the event, which was fun. And it was nice to have a partner to do that with, because you took one side, and I went and explored the other, and then we sort of met up periodically to compare notes, and then I took a lot of photographs, I started talking to people, you were talking to people, and then we kind of came together at the end of the evening, so our experiences were really different. And I met so many phenomenal people that night. It was just, I went home just smiling. I loved it,
You know, it's not too many events. Like, this year was different because it was an evening event. Usually it's been during the day, and it's still always a nice, like, a luncheon.
Yes.
But just from, with the renovations that happened at Rocket Mortgage, you know, being a whole just upscale venue.
Yes.
You know, you had the terminal tower coming through, the Cleveland lights towering through the windows, you know, as a backdrop, the music.
Yeah. It was stunning.
It was. And I was saying, you know, that was one of the first events where, you know, we often say, like, this is Black excellence, but that was, like, Cleveland's Black excellence at its finest.
Yeah.
I mean, for people that don't do galas, that was a very good entry point. You had people that were dressed. They were...
Absolutely.
You know, it was their night out.
No, it was.
The networking event, you know, the guys were dapping each other. Everybody knew each other. It was like community.
They did. I just, countless times of watching people hug each other, greeting each other, come share the food, come sit with me, come have a drink. It was really just a wonderful event.
Yeah, and I'll even tell the story of Karen from KG's Home Baked Goods. She was actually moving people into the line, like, you want to try their food.
That's right.
And so just that experience of, she had never tried their food.
Ah.
So, you know, I'm going to try this food, and then I'm going to stand there and tell everybody, come over here.
She was a great ambassador.
Yeah, for someone she had only met like 5 minutes before.
Oh, my gosh. And that's what it was. I saw people doing that throughout the event. Come taste this.
And they weren't friends. They weren't like with the organization. Like, I sent you guys over to my friends. Like, you want to go see them. But everything else was like, oh, this is really good.
You have to taste this.
You know, people are sharing plates. Like, taste. Yeah. Go get me another one of those.
Yeah, it was great.
So the food was front and center. The music was amazing. You know, it just was a really great night out for, was that a Monday?
It was a Monday night.
And I think they said over 700 people came. And there were people had brought, like, their children, just, you know, and it wasn't like a kid event, but everybody had a great time.
No, there were a lot of families
photos
there.
And
I noticed a lot of sorority women. They came together. There were some frats.
Mm-hmm.
There were people from churches. It was a real diverse group, young to old, everything in between. It looked like the city of Cleveland because it wasn't just Black.
Right.
There were lots of people there there were business people there. There were people from all different kinds of community. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, was, it was the picture of what Cleveland is.
Yeah. I think that's a great signature event. I mean,
it is.
Like I said, I've been twice, but this year it was just like, it hit that perfect note of everything. You had all types of chefs in different phases.
So very
you had
much some, so.
I think the winner said he had been cooking for like 30, 40 years.
Yes.
And this was his moment. You've got people that have just gotten together. You've gotten some branded, some not. I mean, I just loved all of it. And then even with the addition of the crowd, the mixologist. So
oh, my.
Upstairs.
That was just awesome.
It just was a who's who of Black Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just such a great event.
It could have been anywhere. Honestly, it reminded me of events that used to take place at the World Trade Center because they had a beautiful bar there. And they had a mixologist there that curated all the wine and all the liquor. They would have events like that. And so that upstairs part where they had the mixology and the drinks, it was very clubby. It was very intimate. People were just interacting in a different way. It was hard for them to even move back out into the food floor, which is what we talked about, because it was so comfortable and cozy. People were like, I'm just going to sit up here.
It had those throne chairs with the backdrop from Crown Royal.
Couldn't get the people out of those chairs. It's like, I wanted to sit in one of those chairs. I had to sit on the side, but that's okay. I mean, the mixologists just did their thing.
And here's what I learned. Like, I didn't know there were that many places that had mixologists. So the first person I met, he was like, I'm at Society Lounge. And I'm like, yeah, Society Lounge. Like, I know Society Lounge.
Yes.
So then I asked the lady, the one we'll get to her in a minute.
Okay.
I asked her, I'm like, are you at Society? And she says, no, I'm at Booker's.
She's Erica.
Erica Booker. Right, I'm Erica. She's America Booker. It's a family business, and I know the place.
Yes.
So when I drive home, I drive past there.
Oh.
And I would have never stopped because it, you know, it's just a corner bar.
That's
not to
right.
say just, but it's a corner bar.
Right.
And the one thing that we started at Black Girl was, we want to get people away from their corner bars, but that's an amazing space in Cedar Lea. You know how much I love that neighborhood, and so now I'm like,
I'd go there. Based on having met her. Mm-hmm. And talking to her and all the other people that were there and just the complexity of what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were seriously into making the best possible drinks and people were enjoying it.
Right. And it helped me understand because when I drive past it, you don't know. So it's got the dark windows, you know, it says Booker's and I'm like, oh, this is probably just, you know, our hole in the wall where you have your community of people. You know,
and that's fine.
It is. But sometimes it's hard to go into the community bar if it's not your bar.
Absolutely.
But now I'm like, by meeting her outside somewhere else, it changed. Oh, now it's a family owned. It gives us its own narrative.
Absolutely.
Like, even if it is a hole in the wall or a corner bar, like, maybe that's my corner bar now.
No, I thought that they did an exceptional job of introducing us to places that we didn't know that we definitely now want to visit. Mm-hmm. So we should definitely put her and Booker's on the list of other places to go and explore.
Absolutely. And I really hope that people came away from that with wanting to go back to the places.
Good.
So, you know, if you're not living on a certain side of town, if you're only from Glenville and only know Capo, but you really liked something that was
on
Lorain.
Right.
I hope that you go to Lorain and visit that business. Because so often we get into the, I just live in Euclid. Mm-hmm. That Booker's is too far. It's in Cleveland Heights. I guess I'll never go. Hopefully next year. And I said I'd do that. But go over there because you know the food exists.
It does. The food. And it's too easy sometimes to just not go out.
Yep.
But every single time that I go out and I may kick and scream about, I don't feel like it. I've had a long day. I'm never disappointed. And that day was, I really didn't want the evening to end. And you and I were one of the last people to leave the event.
They were taking tables down.
Yeah, on Monday. And I thought, I can't wait now for next year. But I have a whole list of places now to discover. And now people are following me on Instagram and I'm communicating with them. And they're inviting me to come to their places. So that was huge.
Were you able to network being a food business?
Yes.
Because I saw that.
Yes.
I mean, not you necessarily, but I saw people.
Well, I immediately, when I went to meet them, I would start following their page and they would follow me and they saw my page as Pat's Granola. They've now reached out to me saying, Granola, Miss Pat, tell us more about that. And a few of the caterers said, well, we cater breakfast and brunches and other events. Let's collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just an awesome benefit.
There was a moment at the end, right when they were doing those final votes.
Yes.
And I was walking back around because there was still obviously food out. And I'm like, well, everybody's eating at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, who can I go visit or check in with? And I went back over and you could see the chefs eating each other's food.
Oh, my.
And they were chatting.
I
noticed.
What
do you use?
And,
it was such a great moment. And so the best moment, though, was when I was with Karen and she met Tawana from Pearl Flower.
Yes, yes.
And they encountered each other. So Karen, and I hope she doesn't mind me telling the story, kind of fangirl, like, oh, my God, it's your Chef Tawana from Pearl Flower. She says, I'm Karen from KB. Girl, I know who you are. And so there's a picture of them both like, I've been wanting to meet you. No, I've been wanting to meet you.
They had crushes on each other.
Right. But that idea now, you know, of you were in that space, you met somebody, you know, there's no way to say, like, we don't support.
No.
That was just such a great moment.
I will support them, and I see that they now want to support me. I think that having the new Foodie podcast is going to introduce the city and even outside of the city to people who want to experience what you and I saw mm-hmm. on Monday night, and we need to just blow that up. I mean, I'm excited to really give exposure to some of these businesses that maybe once a year this is what they do, but they're just doing their thing every single day, all day. Mm-hmm. I want to unpack that. Mm-hmm. I want to learn more about them and what they do and help to give them more business so that we can keep that in this city.
Right. I think, you know, as we go to the podcast and we start to make that transition of growing that audience, mm-hmm. I think the other thing is just, you know, how we strike that balance, because we can talk about Black excellence and everybody showed up to the nines.
Yes.
But again, back to our reality, there's some people that still couldn't even access that.
Right. So,
and even if they had, you know, some of us could have still gone home to no fresh fruits and vegetables.
That's right.
And so just trying to strike the chord of the balance, because what I came away with that night is the support that we had for each other.
Correct.
So as much as it's kind of that, as we talk about in Greek life, mm-hmm. you know, the Zetas are the Zetas, the AKAs are the AKAs, and we laugh at each other and we rank on each other or whatever, but then at the end of the day, we're all Greek. It's all Greek life.
That's right.
It's all family.
It is.
And so as we talk about, you know, you have this great this or that and you're this excellent business, you know, we also know that our folks are struggling.
Well, maybe this is an opportunity for people who run some of these businesses. We help them, they help other people. Mm-hmm. Because maybe they don't know that there's a need. Because maybe they do have food that's left over at the end of their day or after a party that they could consciously say, this food can go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And maybe we just figure out what that story is.
Right.
Because people really do want to help people.
Absolutely.
They do.
And even to inspire the next step. So, like you were mentioning, the person in New York that collects the foods.
Yes.
Like that person might be here listening to the show at one point.
Right.
And say,
right.
I could do that.
Right. I talked to Shayna before we started today about a group that I know from New York, In God's Love We Deliver, where it was started on the concept of catered events that had food that was left over. This lady literally had the ability, and she took a truck and she would pick the food up and she would take it to persons in need. And it started out, she was, I believe, taking it either to churches or to shelters or to even people along the Bowery where people would be homeless. Okay. And she would distribute the food. And I said to you, is there a mechanism for us to do that here or to find out, are people doing that and we're not aware? So I think it gives us some opportunities.
Okay. So as we get ready to wrap up this show, because we're going to go transition and to let you do your show, okay. How do people find you? How do they find your granola? Because at the end of the day, we still want them to support Pat's
That's
Granola.
Right. That's right. So I do sell it online. It's patsgranola.com. But it is available in retail spaces. It's at Troubadour Coffee Roasters in Fairview Park. In Cleveland, it is at Sports and Spine Physical Therapy. And it is available beginning this week at a local foods, and that is in Painesville.
Oh, nice.
And we also sell it at Hudson News at the CLE Hopkins Airport.
Wow, that's
at the Hudson News stand.
Yeah.
And so we're growing our business exponentially, and we're doing it consciously because I want to be able to make those relationships with businesses that I interact with, and it's been great.
How do they find you on social media or
Yep, Pat's Granola. Okay. Pat's Granola, social media, Facebook, and Instagram.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you for being on my
show. Thank you. This was terrific.
And we'll see you over at the Cleveland Food Story, the CLE Food Stories podcast.
Okay. I'm ready to go.
Look forward to having you as part of the Black Girl family.
Thank you so much, Shana. Right,
take care.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at blackgirlincle. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.